Welcome back in. Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Frazier here with you on this Wednesday morning, a four-hour edition of Robbie and Rex Road. 1 hour down, Joe Rex Road, three to go. Going to 10 a.m. today.
I don't know, man. I don't know about this.
Is that enough?
Like, we're just starting. That pre-show meeting was on the air.
Pre-show meeting was unbelievable. Good gracious.
Went by so quick.
It did.
All right.
Izzo wasn't even here. Scared him off with your outfit yesterday.
Yeah. Well, we got a big thing that would be like his jammies here, his sweatshirt.
Jammies. We'll have Vols head coach Tony Vitello coming up on the show at 8:15, so looking forward to that. Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com will join us at 9 o'clock. By the way, so we're having our golf tournament today. So, by the way, speaking of golf, we're going to actually talk about golf a little bit later this hour, which Rex Road is just fired up about. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, they made some news.
They made some news yesterday. But we got our golf tournament today, so a little bit of a different schedule today. We'll be on until 10. Willie and D-May's taking over at 10 o'clock until 1. Chase from 1 to 2, and then Caroline and Michelle from 2 to 6. So a little bit of a different setup today because of our golf tournament, but it'll be fun. Looking forward to all of that. Taking your thoughts on UC Soros and the report from the fourth period last night. It says, quote, the Kings had discussed a trade involving goalie UC Soros during the season prior to L.A. landing Korpisalo/Gavrikov. A package involved multiple firsts/prospects. Curious if L.A. revisits these talk this month or if that ship has sailed. This from the fourth period last night. J.C. in Gullitsville says, if I trade Soros, Johansson and his contract must be attached somehow. This might spark a Rob rant. Guys. I understand that everybody wants to get rid of the Johansson contract. Like, if you're trading UC Soros, part of the reason would be, yes, you feel like you've got your future goaltender in Askarov. But the other part of that is, like, the return that you're going to get for Soros is going to be pretty big.
Could actually, like, be significant for your future.
You know what a big way to water down that return would be? Is attaching Ryan Johansson's contract to it. He's only got – I mean, guys, he's got 2 years left on it at this point. At this point, either buy him out or let him play it out. Well, those are the way you're going to have to go about it. But nobody's trading for Ryan.
Or maybe he plays well this year, and then that last year someone.
Somebody.
But I still doubt that. But maybe.
Maybe.
But, yeah, why would you attach him to this to say, here, have nothing back?
Yeah, think about that. What that would do to the return. Like, let's say, just for the sake of argument, you traded Soros and you got two first-rounders and a prospect back for him. And it could be more than that, could be less than that, but let's just say that's what they got. What would attaching Ryan Johansson's contract to that do to it?
Some used pucks?
Some major damage to the return. So I would not do that. I get it. I do. I get people are tired of Ryan Johansson. They want his contract gone. I get it. At this point, it's 2 years left. Like, either buy it out or just let it play out. And to me, the more I think about it, Joe, like, it's not like the Predators are going out this summer and being aggressive in free agency. The free agency class sucks this summer. There's no reason to do that. And unless you're making some blockbuster trade and bringing in Mitch Marner or Austin Matthews and the contracts that they bring, you're going to have plenty of cap room. Just let the contract go with Ryan Johansson. Let him play it, and then you got 1 year left on it after this next year. I mean, by the time that this young core, in my opinion, and maybe they view this differently, but by the time that Evangelista and Parsonen and Kemmel and all these guys are coming up and they're quote-unquote ready, the contract will be off the books at that point, and you can advance from there. So I don't – there's not going to be anybody that trades for Ryan Johansson, I don't think. And if I'm the Predators, the more I think about it, I don't think I'd buy it out either. I just let him go, and then you get the contract totally off the books in 2 years.
I think they should attach Johansson and Duchene.
Oh, good.
To Soros. Johnny in White House, if we're going to shame people on the text line, Johnny White House, who, by the way, last week said, time for the Rex rant, closes app. Very unkind of you, Johnny. He says, thoughts on trading Soros to get Arvidsson back? There we go.
To get Arvidsson back? Yeah, I don't think so.
I'll pass.
Look, first off, Arvidsson had a good year last year, which was good to see. But he is 30 years old, a small forward. And his big kind of like separating asset used to be his speed and his work ethic. And I don't know that that speed at the age of 30 is going to be something that's really worth it all that much anymore. Look, played well last year. He had 59 points. He had 26 goals, 59 points. So good for him. He played really well last year.
It was good to see.
It was good to see it.
I mean, that's not the future for
you. I think that ship has sailed at this point. Yeah. So the return, like if they're doing this with L.A., it's probably for one of those younger prospects. You know, L.A. went through a time. Obviously, they won the two cups in 12 and 14. And they've been trying to basically reattach it and get back to it since about 16, 17. And now they feel like they're finally there. And, you know, Kevin Fiala, big part of that, signed him. He's playing pretty well for the LA Kings. But if you're getting somebody back, it's going to be one of their younger prospects. It's not going to be one of their veteran roster players, nor right. should it be if you're the Predators.
No, that's not where you're going. Look, if you're getting someone who's 30 right now, better be a great player. And I don't even know who that would be. But, you know, the guys we're talking about, like with the Maple Leafs, for example, those guys are all in their mid-20s.
Right.
Maybe late, but for the most part, like 26 years old, right? That's a lot different than 30. Caleb and Gallatin says, do you guys see Johansson dropping down a line or two? I think there's a huge range of scenarios with him. I'm very interested to see Ryan Johansson in camp, understanding the situation. And again, we're all just assuming they're not buying him out. I don't think they will. But, I mean, if he comes in absolute top shape and he is, like 2 years ago, I thought he showed up and made a little of a statement. He had a good year. And then last year it was kind of back to some of the same stuff. Yep. So, and if it's that, then, yeah, I think, you know, he'll be in the lineup, but be a little bit of a reduced role probably.
Well, I mean, the first thing with him is, like, is he going to be completely healthy? I mean, I think he is. He looked like, you know, based on his comments at the end of the season, he was supposed to be back on the ice by the, you know, mid-May, end of May. But, I mean, that's a pretty serious injury that he suffered with a laceration on the part of his leg. So, I mean, I think he'll be fine, but that's something that's pretty serious to come back from there. So that's the number one thing, like how healthy is he going to be and what does that look like when you get that back? But I do think, when training camp rolls around, as Andrew Burnett and his staff are sitting there and Barry Trotz is going through, you know, what the roster looks like on paper heading into camp, I think in pencil you're going to have Ryan Johansson probably on third line. Like, I don't know. And it's, you know, I'm not saying he can't get out of camp and be a top six forward for the team, but I don't know how, based on the way they ended the season and what the lineup looked like, Ryan Johansson is not in the top six. Like, he's going to have to earn that. Like, I see no way right now that heading into camp, he is a top six forward. Doesn't mean he can't be out of camp, but heading into camp, he is not a top six forward for this team right now.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. I mean, we don't know. Like, you know, going back to Alex Doherty with Andrew Burnett, there's still just so much we don't know. He did a good job, obviously, a very good job in the interim year with Florida, and I think maintenance is a good way to put it. Like, here's what we do. They did it, won all seven of their first seven games. Here's what we're going to continue to do. Good job, but like, there's still, like, his own stamp on a team is going to be seen here for the first time. And that includes, to me, like, how he views lineup situations, young players. Obviously, like last year, you know, Tomasino, again, was it all Hines that Tomasino went back? Was it Poilin Hines? You know, I don't know, but you know, how does he feel about young guys in prominent positions right away? Or, you know what, stay in Milwaukee. I mean, there's a few guys I'm not totally sure they're going to be here or not next year. Like, I think Evangelista is going to be on this team.
I think so, too.
I think Kemmel's not going to be on this team, right? Those seem clear-cut. But there's a few of those young guys that, I mean, what's Tomasino's role next year in this team?
It's a good question. I mean, I don't think he's guaranteed a spot in camp. I don't. I mean, I don't think Evangelista is either. But
I just think he's gonna.
I think he's gonna make it. Yeah, like I think Evangelista is gonna make it. I think Parsonen's gonna make it. But I mean, they ended the season last year with a lot of young guys on the team. Like, they're not gonna have enough room for all of them.
That was by necessity.
Exactly. Like, they're not gonna have enough room for all of them just based on the way the roster is right now.
Like Parsonen. I don't know what his ceiling is, but, man.
He's going to be on the team.
He could be. Right. But, I mean, he could be good.
Yeah.
Like, real good. And maybe not. You know? I mean, there's just so many – with so many guys that – like, Parsonen is a guy who could kind of give you some of what you used to get slash want to get from Johansson.
Right.
But I don't know that he's ready for that next year.
Well, even Novak, right? So, Novak had a great year. I mean, he came in and – I mean, exceeding expectations is probably even too light.
Yeah.
I mean, he blew expectations out of the water. So he came in and he had 43 points in 51 games. So, I mean, obviously, that is exceptional from what he has been in his career. I mean, he hadn't scored 43 points in a season since he played for the Waterloo Blackhawks of the USHL back in 2014-15. So, I mean, you're talking about Milwaukee. He's played full seasons in the AHL. And he's not had 43 points. So what is he? Like, is Tommy Novak, is he just a late bloomer? And he's, I mean, again.
Did he get on a heater?
Like, Tommy Novak to me is a different discussion than Evangelista and Tomasino and some of these other guys because he's older. Like, Tommy Novak's 26. So it's a different discussion than Evangelista and Kemmel and all these other guys. I think people forget how old he is sometimes. He's 26. So a lot of times when you're 26, like, you just kind of are what you are. Now, we do see late bloomers. So, the question is Barry Trotz, does he view Tommy Novak's season last year as it's a great story, he got hot, and he had 43 points in 51 games, or does he say, you know what, he's a top six centerman for us? Because there's a big difference between those two things. And I don't know which way they lean. Quite frankly, I don't know which way I lean on that right now. But I think there are some people that just assume that, oh, yeah, Tommy Novak, top six forward. And I'm not saying that you're necessarily wrong. I just don't know that I'm quite willing to absolutely go there yet.
Yeah, there really aren't like a lot of absolute locks, you know?
Yeah.
In how this thing is going to look. And again, what does Brunette prioritize? And it's also just like, what, I mean, do they trade Saros? Because if that's the case, then I think you see more youth because, okay, you have that year where you sort of get a real look and you're in transition and goal.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get back into the Tennessee Titans. We asked Mike Herndon yesterday about a specific Titans player that I think is one of the more intriguing storylines heading into this season. We'll get into that coming up next. Make sure you are around today for the second annual Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament presented by Gary Force Acura, benefiting Souls for Souls. You can assist Souls for Souls in their mission to provide new shoes for kids experiencing homelessness in Nashville with a donation or through the silent auction. Just text the word donate to make a donation or text auction to view the items for silent auction to 615-737-1025 or visit thegamenashville.com/golf. So make sure you check that out as we go throughout the day today. Looking forward to the golf tournament coming up today over at Hermitage Golf Course to a great cause with Souls for Souls as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, where their advanced pay by TJ option can save you thousands when selling your home. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. Live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. I'm going to get a little Huey Lewis in here, Joe. It fires me up.
Yeah.
You big Huey Lewis guy?
Oh, yeah, man.
Who's not?
I mean, who doesn't like Huey Lewis?
I mean, come on. We're going to get back into the Titans here in just a second, but I do want to get to this question really quickly on the text line. I got a text that says, honest question, and I love it if you guys could discuss it on the air. How much blame do you dish out when it comes to John Himes' regime for not working? We all know Jared blames the coach for everything, but shouldn't the players have some responsibility? Thanks for being awesome. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, hold on now. You need to tell us your name because right before this question, this is the text that this person sent. Quote, listening to Joe and listening to Jared on a daily basis, it blows my mind Jared ever wins a Jared versus Joe battle. That's a great, great point.
Great texter.
Yeah, give us your name so we can shout you out on that one. I mean, look, Jared doesn't win sports arguments, okay? We all know this. I'll take this question first. Jared way overvalues coaching in the NHL, okay? That's what I've concluded with all this. Not that it's not important. Not that it doesn't matter. Of course it matters. But the blame – I mean, John Hines, I'm really – man, I'm not going to lie. I'm rooting hard for John Hines to get the Rangers.
Oh, I am too.
And you know what? If he does, then we're going to find out, because that's a team you have to win. You need to win multiple playoff series with that team next year if you're the coach of the New York Rangers, okay? Yep. And if it doesn't work out, then at some point it's like, okay, what's your record? That's his big thing, or people who want to knock Hines. Well, what has he ever done? Look at what he's done in these years. Never won a playoff series, et cetera, et cetera. I don't even know if the players bear responsibility. It's who the players are that bears responsibility. So it's the GM. The GM and the coach in an NHL team. But I'd say in any professional sports team, the GM's more important. I mean, right?
No, I agree.
I mean, what name me the sport where the coach is more important than the GM. It's about, I mean, I'll
college football.
But the coach is the GM.
I know.
Yeah. it's about the Jimmys and Joes, way more than the X's and O's. Cliche for you, but it's so true.
Yep, I agree. And like you, I'm rooting very hard for John Hines to end up with the Rangers job. Apparently that announcement is coming somewhat soon, so we'll see.
Lavi, what would you think
Step
about
aside.
Being my associate coach?
Be awesome. So we talked to Mike Herndon yesterday from PaulKuharsky.com, and we got to do a variety of different things with him. But one of the things we talked about was Harold Landry. And as we know, Harold Landry is coming off the ACL injury, and you know he's not out there on the field right now. But you're hopeful, if you're a Titans fan, that by the time training camp rolls around and you get through the preseason, that he's ready to go and he's available to be out there and to contribute for the Tennessee Titans. But a question that I've wondered about with that, I think a lot of us are just assuming that he's coming back and he's going to pick up right where he left off and he's going to be the Harold Landry of 2021 and the Titans are going to have a really good pass rush and go from there. And maybe he will. But we've seen guys, even here in Nashville, coming off an ACL, sometimes it takes a little while, not for them to get back on the field, but for them to be the player that they were before the injury. And Bud Dupree really never got there. You know, he had a bunch of different injuries that he kept dealing with, too. Obviously, Taylor Wan never really got back there. Robert Woods never got back there. So what does it mean for Harold Landry, and what are fair expectations? We asked that to Mike Herndon yesterday from PaulKuharsky.com. Here's what Mike Herndon had to say on our show. Mike, you know, obviously, they missed Harold Landry last year. That goes without saying. And you would assume that by the time camp rolls around, just based on the timeline of the injury, that he'll be back and he'll be ready to go. But we see it with guys a lot coming off the ACL. Like, maybe they're available to play, but maybe they're not quite back to full strength of whoever player they were. So as you look at Harold Landry, what do you think are fair expectations for Harold Landry coming off the ACL injury?
To put it in like a number form, I would say a fair expectation would be, you know, 7 or 8 sacks, which isn't great. I mean, obviously he was coming off of a 12-sack season in 2021 when he had the ACL injury. So it would be a step back, but I think that's what you've got to expect. Like you said, I mean, we've seen it time and time again here recently. Bud Dupree, Taylor Lewan, you can go back to Jack Conklin. You look at Robert Woods last year. Guys coming off of the ACL, and even if they don't have the re-injury issues that, you know, obviously Lewan had, Conklin had some re-injury issues. Even if they don't have the re-injury stuff, the performance typically dips. I mean, we saw it with Robert Woods last year. He just never, ever looked explosive, even though he was available for all 17 games, right? So I think, you know, Harold Landry does a lot for this team when he's been on the field for them. And I think he'll still be able to do some of those things. But I would temper expectations as far as like a huge statistical season or huge performance from Landry. They're going to really need Arden Key to be a huge part of this pass rush. They're going to need D'Amico Autry and Jeffrey Simmons to be outstanding inside. And they're going to need Rashad Weaver and you know, maybe somebody else that maybe we don't even – we don't know who that is right now to step up and really help this pass rush to kind of help Landry through this first season back from the ACL.
That was Mike Herndon yesterday from PaulKuharsky.com on Harold Landry. So, Joe, when you hear that from Mike Herndon and you think about the question of what are fair expectations for Harold Landry heading into this season, what do you think? What comes to mind?
Well, yeah, I think you have to temper them for sure. And I think it's all a good point. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, Harold Landry could have a very good 4.5 sack season, like, given that this is his first year off an ACL, and still be a guy who gives you durability, tons of snaps, the ability to play in every situation, good run. I mean, you know, just being an all-around good player. Like, the sack number, I mean, sacks matter. Sack number matters. But I think, you know, if Harold Landry has a double-digit sack year this year, I'll be – that's awfully impressive. Look, Harold Landry is a very good all-around player, and obviously the year he had – to get himself that big contract was, you know, those are great numbers. Like, here, I mean, he's never been a guy who's like going to be like a 15 sack guy. And also, look, that great year, he deserves a ton of credit. He deserves a ton of credit to me more than anything for like the durability. I mean, he finally has this, you know, brutal ACL tear, the end of camp, but he was always on the field. Also, like that year, he benefited from it helps when you have, you know, Autry and Simmons doing what they are doing.
Yep.
So it all works together. To me, it's like if he's part of a defense that is overwhelming, whoever gets the quarterback to the ground doesn't matter, you know? And if he's consistently on the field and can get back to like playing that all-around role that he played, there's a lot of value in that.
So what do you think? What should expectations be for Harold Landry this year? What are fair expectations for Harold Landry? He's got a cap hit of 18.8 this year heading into the 2023 season. Last time we saw him, he had 12 sacks, 22 quarterback hits, and then the ACL injury last year. So what should fair expectations be for Harold Landry heading into the 2023 season? We'll take your thoughts. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll get more into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Fraser here with you on this Wednesday morning. A four-hour edition of Robbie and Rex Road today. We'll be with you until 10 o'clock this morning. We'll have Tony Vitello coming up at 8:15. Looking forward to that conversation with him as Tennessee prepares for their super regional matchup on the road against Southern Miss. Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com will join us at 9 o'clock. Taking your thoughts on the Titans right now, 615-737-1025. And throwing the question out there, what are fair expectations for Harold Landry heading into this season? Last time we saw him, he had 12 sacks, 22 quarterback hits, had the best year of his career, and got rewarded with a five-year, $87.5 million contract. Obviously, he made it through most of camp last year and then got hurt at the end of training camp, and he missed the entire season with the ACL injury. You're hoping that he's back and ready to go by the time the season comes around this year, but what are fair expectations? A couple different thoughts on the text line. Chuck on the text line says, I'm not looking for much at Landry this year. Most coming off an ACL needs another year to be completely back up to speed because they don't trust that knee. Got another texter that says, his cap hit has nothing to do with expected outcomes this year. They gave him that deal assuming he would stay healthy and improve his ability as a pass rusher. At this point, he's just trying to get back real game speed and stay healthy. His goal should be to match his production pre-injury. This is from an unnamed texter on the text line. I mean, if he can match his production pre-injury from 2021, sign up for that right now for the Titans.
Yep, that'd be good. I mean, that'd be a bit surprising this year, but – you know, I mean, at this point, you know, he's not out there. You got Dupree. You got three guys who obviously, you know, Raidens and Farley, and those guys are obviously trying to, like, be backups of any significance, you know, but they're all not out there right now. And, you know, I think the goal, sure, double-digit sacks. I just don't know that that's realistic this year.
Matt on the text line says, my expectations for Landry are somewhere between 7 to 10 sacks and to be pretty much the same player he was before the injury. The reason being is the injury he sustained happened in camp last year, so he's had almost a full year to recover rather than the 8 to 10 month that most players try to come back and play off an ACL tear. And that is an interesting point. I mean, we saw Bud Dupree when he got hurt in Pittsburgh before he came here to the Titans. He tore his ACL, I believe, in November the year before. And he came back, and he was active in training camp, and then later admitted that he probably tried to come back too soon. You would assume by the time camp rolls around, and I would imagine that Vrabel and the Titans are going to be pretty cautious with Harold Landry as they approach training camp this year. I mean, you're talking about almost a complete calendar year from the injury. So maybe that helps in terms of what his production looks like and the readiness of Harold Landry to start.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I understand the timeline. That's good. It's good to have the full year. But again, I don't know what the percentage is, but it sure seems like, and certainly around here, we've seen, you know, that first year back is just, it's just limited. So, you know, 2024 could be a better year. Although, you know, 2024, is Danico Autry still part of this team? I mean, I feel like this is his last year. He was out there, by the way, yesterday. He wasn't in OTAs, and Danico Autry looks pretty good to me out there.
Yeah.
So, though, that's another thing. I mean, what's the defense look like? But, yeah, it's a big deal to get him back. I mean, there's no doubt.
Well, and then the other part of this is, you know, all of us would agree, even the playoff game against Cincinnati, they had 9 sacks, and Dupree was healthy, Landry was healthy, you had Simmons, you had Autry, and that was a foursome there that was tenacious and was really difficult to deal with. I don't know the Titans are going to have that, but, like, what does Arden Key bring to the table? Like, is Arden Key can he be an every down pass rusher that the Titans can rely on the other side of the field over there? You know, we brought up Rashad Weaver. He played a lot last year. How much better is Rashad Weaver now than he was this time last year? How much improvement is he still going to have? You know, basically, can the Titans, with Harold Landry back in the fold, can they get close to being not 9 sacks is what they were in the Cincinnati game, because that was a combination, one, of their front and two, of that awful Bengals offensive line. And we saw that kind of come to a head in that game. But can you have a pass rush with those 4 guys, and really 5 when you throw Weaver in there, that is consistently getting after the quarterback? You know, they didn't really have that last year. I mean, they had it from Autry, and Jeffrey Simmons was playing on a hurt ankle all last year. Obviously, they didn't have Landry. And Bud Dupree, I mean, was nowhere to be found because he's hurt all the time. So you didn't really have that last year. If they can get it this year on a more consistent basis, how much does that help the defense, and particularly the pass defense, which we spend so much time talking about, the 32nd ranked pass defense last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think Key, you know, so it's hard to tell right now, but Key looks the part out there, and based on what he's done, I mean, if you're going to get a whole season of Key, that's certainly a better outcome than the last 2 years of Dupree either being not around, or, you know, here and there he had his moments, but just fully available Arden Key, that's an upgrade, you know, over what you got from Bud Dupree. And maybe, you know, I don't know if Bud Dupree is an example of someone who truly did just benefit greatly from playing across from TJ Watt, or if it's just as simple as, you know, you're a big guy, you have an ACL, and then all of a sudden you have all these other injuries here, and it just, we just never saw who he was as a player pre-injury. Regardless, it just wasn't nearly good enough. Certainly wasn't worth the money. So Key should be an upgrade if he's available, and again, he should also benefit. And if Landry is close to pre-injury Landry, then Key, you think about all those other matchups, I mean, Key should have some pretty sweet matchups.
He should. And the Landry part of this is interesting, like his production, because I remember in camp last year, Joe, after he had signed the deal and that they had Harold Landry locked up again, one of the things we talked about was, can he replicate the production he had in 2021? I mean, you look at his career, and until last year, he had basically been on the field for pretty much every snap that the Titans had taken defensively. And, you know, rookie year, 4.5 sacks. He followed it up in 19 with 9 sacks. And then 2020, when the defense was atrocious, he had 5.5 sacks. Didn't have a whole lot of help on that defensive front. And then 12 sacks in 2021. So even last year before the injury, the question was, okay, what exactly is he as a pass rusher? I'm with you. Like, he's not a 15-sack guy. He's never really been that. But is he a consistent double-digit sack guy? I know that sacks aren't the end of the world, and they're not the most important thing. It's about getting to the quarterback, and he got 22 quarterback hits in 2021, which was, I think, the previous high was 16. So that's a significant uptick from 16 to 22 in 2021? Can you be a 17, 18, 19 quarterback hit guy this year?
Yeah, and just be part of affecting quarterbacks consistently. Yeah. So basically, he's a 7-point something season sack guy in 4 years. I'm not saying that's what he is. You could almost, you take out the rookie year, I guess. I mean, it's a rookie year. But, 20, you see, when your defense is bad and you're not, and you have no one else on the other side, well, you got 5.5 sacks. You bring in Autry, and, that's a big deal. The Autry signing is, it's especially in the later stages of John Robinson's tenure, easily up at the top, right near the top of moves he made, maybe as good as any move. You think about the cost, but that has been a game changer. And look at last year when he was on the field, they looked awfully good as soon as that Green Bay game ended. But when he got carted off, and then it looked a little different after that.
It did, and his age too, right? You take a look at Autry. He's 32. We talked about this last year. Like, could he replicate what he did the year before? And he did. He was every bit as good last year that he was at 2021. Maybe he'll be every bit as good this year. That's what you're hoping for if you're the Titans, that he's every bit as good this year that he's been the last couple of years for you. If that's the case and Jeffrey Simmons is healthy, then I think Arden Key and Harold Landry could have a lot of success just based on those two. Like, the attention that Jeffrey Simmons and Danico Autry are going to occupy with other teams, that could be really good news for Landry and Key at that point too.
Ron says the way Weaver played last year, he should be ready to step right in and not miss a beat. I said earlier, yesterday he did have a really great rep with an inside move to beat Dillard. So it's like, however you want to look at that, great. That's great about Rashad Weaver. Are you worried about Andre Dillard? But best versus best, the people are going to – you hope there's wins on both sides. Yeah, and Weaver's interesting. I think Weaver had some good moments last year. He had a really good start.
Yep.
And then – he obviously had a big mistake in that Kansas City game and not, maintaining where he was supposed to be, and Mahomes gets out. He's a solid to good player. Can he be good to very good?
Right.
I don't know.
No, it's a good question. He had 5.5 sacks last year in 16 games, 15 quarterback hits. So, it could be
he's a factor.
He's a factor. He's going to be in there. He's going to be playing. He's going to be a part of the rotation here. He may not be a quote-unquote starter, but he's going to be a part of the mix here when everybody's healthy, and it would be great if he comes in and he can give you another 5.5, 6, 7 sacks somewhere in that neighborhood based on the role he's going to play. You'd sign up for that now if you're the Titans. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it is time for the Rob Rant. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. We will do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
We're vibing, Robbie.
Hey, Robbie. Still vibing, kid?
Still vibing, bud.
We're vibing, Robbie. Vibing. 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 We're vibing, Robbie.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check it out every morning at 7:45. The Rob Rant, the Red Rant, or the Rex Rant. One of us will be ranting every morning at 7:45 here on the program. It's quite a mashup that was put together by Ryan Porth back in the day.
Oh, man. Remember the first time he played that? He was rocking out to that thing.
He was. He was very excited. There's a couple of different ways I could go with this rant, Joe. One of it is totally self-serving on our part because news always breaks directly after our show. And that was, again, the case yesterday with both the news of the Hattiesburg Regional was announced, literally right when we got off the air yesterday.
Of course.
Tennessee was going to have to go on the road, which we'll get into with Tony Vitello coming up here in just a few minutes on the show. And then a few minutes after that, a bombshell yesterday in the golfing world of the PGA Tour, LIV Golf, and the DP World Tour agreeing to unify. So there's been all this bad blood between the PGA Tour and LIV Golf specifically over the course of really the last year, and it's been pretty out there in the open. Rory McIlroy has been very vocal with his displeasure of LIV Golf. Brooks Koepka and, you know, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, some of these other guys that have gone on to LIV, Phil Mickelson, the first one that went to LIV. You know, they went and they chased after huge money. You know, Saudi Arabia, they had a public investment fund pretty much, and there's huge money involved going over to LIV Golf, and where that money comes from and what that money is otherwise profited by is a big point of discussion in all this with LIV, with the Saudi-backed money there. And there was a lot of, you know, morality yelling, I guess, at, you know, the LIV players for going over there and chasing the bag rather than sticking to their morals and sticking with the PGA Tour. So it's been really, you know, it's been really interesting to watch from that standpoint, because a lot of players have been kind of sniping back and forth at each other. And then Brooks Koepka wins the PGA Championship a couple weeks ago, and it's a victory for LIV Golf and all these things. So it's been a really dramatic situation over the last year to watch this take place. I did not think that we were really ever going to get to a place where they united. And then yesterday, it just kind of happened out of nowhere. And I thought when I first saw the news, I was shocked by it. But I thought, huh. Well, I have noticed, like, Rory McIlroy and some of these other guys kind of being a little bit more quiet about it lately. Mm. And, like, when Brooks Koepka won the PGA, a lot of those guys are close with Brooks Koepka, so they all congratulated him, all this stuff. And I was like, huh, I wonder if they knew. Nope, they did not know. Like, all the PGA Tour players yesterday basically found out on Twitter and on social media that the PGA Tour and LIV Golf were merging together. And they are irate about it. The PGA Tour players are really mad, because part of the messaging from the PGA was, you know, yeah, we're not going to have, you know, as big of purses for money in tournaments as some of these LIV players has, but this has always been the PGA Tour. This has always been the professional level of golf, and we're sticking with it. LIV Golf offered Tiger Woods reportedly $1 billion, and he turned it down just because of his stance on the PGA Tour. So you have the PGA Tour officials saying one thing, and now these players, who some of which have turned down spots in LIV Golf for a ton of money.
Turned down a lot of money.
Turned down a lot of money. Now all of a sudden the organization that you've stuck by has basically gone behind your back and is sticking it to you and partnering up with LIV Golf anyway. Players are very mad, and I'm very interested to see how this plays. It's interesting, Joe, because, like, the golf fan in me, and I don't know officially that this is going to happen, for the rest of this year, PGA is going to play their schedule, LIV's going to play their schedule, and that's going to be what it is. I would assume at some point when they're unifying, like, they're going to play some tournaments together, and you're going to have all the best players in the world back. So, you know, we see that already with the major tournaments. When the Masters come around, PGA's come around, the U.S. Open's coming up, British Open's coming up, all the players from both sides will be there, and I love having all the best players in the world at the same tournament. So the selfish side of me, like the golf fan, likes that there's a path to all the best players being back in the same tournament. But the way that this has all gone down is really shady, and this is going to be a huge story in the world of sports.
I mean, Jay Monahan.
Yeah.
My God. Yeah, first of all, like you said, those guys turned down all this money, and so now they get hosed. But in this, you know, the clip of Jay Monahan with Jim Nance last year when this was percolating, leaning in heavily on 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
Leaning in on that, and, of course, the quote of, you know, have you ever felt ashamed to be in the PGA? And then now to just flip, well, everything's okay. I mean, Jay Monahan, I mean, it's one of two things to me. One, first of all, I'd like to know how much Jay Monahan personally benefited.
Yep.
But there's also talk about, you know, lawsuits and, you know, the idea that they didn't want to open up their books, and so he lost in some way, lost leverage in some way. I mean, frankly, like, I hope that's it, and he's not just a total scumbag who just finally got a check in his face that he couldn't turn down. You know, I don't know. But did you see this Chris Murphy, senator from Connecticut,
tweet
about this? Okay. So he quote tweeted the breaking news yesterday and said, quote, "So weird. PGA officials were in my office 2 months ago talking about how the Saudis' human rights record should disqualify them from having a stake in a major American sport." I guess maybe their concerns weren't really about human rights.
It turns out, I think one of the things that we've, I guess, relearned yesterday, Joe, is that in the end, in the world of sports, and really in a lot of situations in life, money wins out at the end of the day, and money has won out in this situation. Now, the interesting part, there's a Netflix documentary series called Full Swing that they've come out with season one. You know, I enjoy it because I enjoy watching golf. It kind of goes behind the scenes, and it was there last year for like the players breaking off into the live stuff, and it was really interesting to watch. Well, they tweeted out yesterday that they were there when this thing went down, and they have like footage of different players like reacting to the live and PGA unification, and that's coming out in 2024. So whenever that comes out, season two of Full Swing, yours truly will be highly invested in that. That'll be good.
I was going to say, like, I actually may – you may get me watching a golf
documentary.
Yeah, I mean, that's – boy, I'm sure that was quite a doozy. It's – yeah, it's very sobering. And the thing is, what's also, I mean, icky about this, but let's be honest, this is better for the game.
This is
better for fans to have all the best players together. So – at some point, it'll just be normalcy and everyone's together and the money is just – I mean, $2 billion to the PIF, it's a quarter out of your pocket.
Yeah.
So that's the uncomfortable thing here, is that it's better for the game, and yet it is – it's appalling.
It is.
Jay Monahan's entire rhetoric and behavior here is appalling.
It is. It really is. And the thing is, like, the PGA Tour players – you know, those who were good enough and were offered money by Liv and turned it down, they've lost out on money here. There's no question about that. Now, I think they're getting ready to make a lot of money. Like, this is going to be something that everybody's probably going to end up making some good money off of.
Sure.
But, like, I do wonder, like, Rory McIlroy specifically, he's one of the faces of the game today, and he has been very outspoken on this. Like, has not shied away from this conversation whatsoever. And apparently he didn't know. Like, he didn't know that the PGA Tour was doing this. So I can only imagine what, like, the last 24 hours have been like for Rory McIlroy and what some of those conversations behind the scenes have looked like. I would imagine irate may not be strong enough of enough word to describe it, would be my guess.
Oh, man. No, I mean, it's – and that's the thing. I give him credit because he has been. It's not I mean, he has been the voice of the opposition. But, of course, Jay Monahan was too, so.
Yeah. Man. Things change very quickly, but what a story. I mean, it came out of nowhere. Came out of nowhere yesterday that this was going down. And again, like I said, like, the selfish part of me, there's probably a path now to all the best players being back on the same tournaments and all those things, but this is a really, really sticky situation with how this has gone down with Liv and with the PGA. So we'll keep you updated on the latest developments on that. That's going to be an ongoing story that is discussed for the next several months leading into next year in the world of sports. So we keep you updated on that. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll have Tony Vitello coming up at 8:15 here on the program. Looking forward to that. Coming up next, we'll get into Tennessee, their matchup on the road against Southern Miss in the Super Regional, and the narrative surrounding Tony Vitello. What is the proper narrative for the Vols head coach? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.